The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. Century of Lies is a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. Recently, the European Union's drug agency, the European Monitoring Center on Drugs and Drug Addiction, released its annual European Drug Report. They held a news conference to discuss their findings. Let's listen to some of that audio. The first speaker is Dimitris Avramopoulos, European Commissioner for Migration, Home Affairs and Citizenship.
My presence here today proves the Commission's and my personal commitment to the fight against one of the most long-standing threats for our societies. Today, as you all know, we launch the annual European Drug Report. I was here with you 1 year ago, and since then, a real substantial progress has taken place. The significant progress achieved by the agency over all these years has resulted in a comprehensive understanding of the EU drug situation. This report is a key tool for all of us to assess, to shape policies, and to implement actions to address challenges. This year's report confirms that the drugs problem in the European Union is not diminishing. There are new products, new patterns of use, new markets, and therefore new health risks. As a matter of fact, health risks linked to high-potency products have increased. The number of new substances continues to grow, and overdose deaths are unfortunately on the rise. Just in the year 2015, 100 new substances were reported for the first time. 70% of the new psychoactive substances we monitor have been detected in the last 5 years alone. As these substances increase, so do also the harms, especially the harms affecting young people. As you all understand, this requires a clear, strong, coherent, and immediate answer at European and national level. We need to reinforce the early warning system and the risk assessment. And I really hope that the agency will play in future a bigger role on that. Once adopted by the European Parliament and the Council, an EU directive will deal with the incrimination of harmful psychoactive substances. These steps will finally allow to make decisive progress and to have swifter decision-making on new psychoactive substances at European level. Allow me now to address another major concern highlighted in the report. And this has to do with the new markets, the new avenues for the drugs trade that criminals find by abusing the internet as a medium. Unfortunately, the internet allows the supply of drugs to be done without any physical interaction. Supply chains, therefore, become shorter, easier, and costs go down. This is where our monitoring should become more systematic and more sophisticated. Our work with the member states, the international community, and the industry about what happens in online drugs markets has to be stepped up. In fact, the internet industry can also help by working with law enforcement. That is why, within the framework of the EU Internet Forum, we are organizing an expert meeting just next week on how exactly to tackle the online drugs trade. Dear friends, criminal activities such as the drugs trade, smuggling, trafficking, and even terrorism are mutually reinforcing. This could be links between drugs and terrorism, even if they are usually opportunistic in nature and not necessarily systematic. Thus, we need a more integrated policy. Some of the Brussels terrorist attackers had previous drugs convictions on their CV, and the authorities knew it. Our fight against organized crime can only be effective if it is smart, multifaceted, and comprehensive. We can make a difference by cooperating more closely, enhancing, exchanging more information, enhancing our cooperation, and by trusting each other even more. I said this after the Paris and Brussels attacks in relation to terrorism. I say this in relation with our fight against smugglers who put migrants' life at risk. Only last week, up to 700 migrants are estimated to have died in the central Mediterranean. Dealing with criminality linked to drugs is a cross-border issue and requires a more coordinated European approach, trust among all stakeholders, and cooperation with countries outside the European Union. This is the only way to protect the Union, to protect our citizens and migrants from those very dangerous criminals. At the same time, as the drugs phenomenon is a global challenge, it requires global and comprehensive engagement. At the UN General Assembly on the world drugs problem, we were firm and united in promoting balanced and evidence-based approaches to drug policies. We are pleased to see that the outcome of this assembly reflects many of the objectives promoted by the European Union. We will now call on all partners to ensure that the commitments taken at UNGAS are implemented. We will also work in the same united and robust way on the preparation of the review in 2019 of the UN Political Declaration on Drugs. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, I would like to welcome the European Drugs Report for 2016 and congratulate the agency for its efforts, and you personally, Alexis. I'm fully committed to working with you, the Member States, and our international partners in order to strengthen our fight against drugs in all its aspects, for our youth, our citizens, our society. Thank you very much for your attention. Going now to the content and the highlights of this report and what is happening with drug use in Europe. Basically, I will structure my presentation around three lines: drug use, the harms and their consequences, and I will speak a bit less this time about drug markets, because you probably know we launched a big European drug market report last April. What I would like to highlight today through those few minutes I will spend with you, present you the highlights of this report, is to highlight the dimension, especially as far as public health is concerned, of some of the new or recent changes and the challenges for the EU. So the first topic, which is drug use, if we look at what has changed in the last year, is first we see, and it is now confirmed, after a few years it appeared there is an increase in MDMA, the name of the molecule for ecstasy, in use of MDMA. There is some rise of the amphetamine-related problems. The use of synthetic opioids is increasingly reported from treatment settings, not in all countries. You will see a bit later that there are different situations in the member states. And then there are some recent prevalence data that indicate modest increases in the use of commonly used drugs, including also heroin. So if we look at illicit drug use in Europe, well, the top five drugs or categories of drugs have not changed. The main, the most commonly used substance is cannabis. Cocaine is the most common stimulant. MDMA is now the most common synthetic stimulant being consumed in the EU. And even if heroin and other opioids seems to be, in comparison, relatively rare, they are concentrating many and most of the harms that are related to drug use. And finally, you will notice that for the new psychoactive substances that the commissioner was mentioning, we still have little prevalence data. For the moment, the only information we have is from the Eurobarometer survey that is organized and financed by the Commission. We hope in the future to be able to have more reliable and comparable data also for this substance. Still, it's technically difficult when you have big population surveys to find enough of those people who belong to the smaller group of intensive NPS users. I told you that the situation is varying from one country to another, so it's not a surprise. You will see that some of the biggest countries in the EU, like Spain, UK, and Germany, there is a stabilization of the consumption of cannabis, while in some other countries, like Czech Republic, Italy, France, Finland, Bulgaria, to a less extent Sweden, there has been a slight increase in the recent years in cannabis use. Talking about the stimulants now, you will see that the map of Europe is even showing more and highlighting more differences, and this is where, as we need to adapt our monitoring to the changing phenomenon, we are including additional data sets and methodologies, including wastewater analysis, which helps us to highlight some geographical spread. And this is how you see that it doesn't come as a surprise. It is complementing information available in other surveys and studies that cocaine is found more in the Western European countries. MDMA is more concentrated in the center north of Europe, especially around Belgium and the Netherlands, and then amphetamines. So if we look now at how this stimulant European market is changing, you will see that in the recent years those changes are a bit irregular. So if we look at cocaine, for instance, we have noticed that there are six countries who come and report higher estimates than before, two are stable and four present lower estimates. I'm talking about those countries where cocaine was mostly used as a stimulant. If we look at MDMA, and I will come back later on the specific issue of MDMA, so there are nine higher estimates and three lower estimates. And then for amphetamines, the situation overall looks more stable, even if There are very important national differences, which is reflected by the fact that we have on one hand seven higher estimates for the consumption of amphetamines, but on the other side we have four countries that present a lower estimate. So a bit contrasted situation in the member states, and this is also why it is important to have this combination of data showing European trends, but being capable to have contextual information about the differences between the member states. As mentioned in the press release of our report, the report presents the issue of problem stimulant use. There is an increase in treatment demand for amphetamines. I would like just to draw your attention to the fact that even if there is an increase, if you look at the numbers, we reach around 12,000 first-time entrants reporting amphetamine use, while for cocaine we are above 25,000. So the graphics show the trends, but you cannot just compare them because there is a difference of proportion between the two graphics. The overall injecting drug use is in decline in Europe, which is a very good news. Except for amphetamines, there is small rise in injecting about new amphetamine clients. We see also that, as I mentioned, opioids, they are the substance that is not the most commonly used, but this is the one that is concentrating most of the risk for the users in terms of health, mainly. You see the national estimates. What is interesting to note is in our previous reports, we were mentioning that there was a through multi-indicator analysis, it seemed there was a reduction of heroin use in Europe. Today, it seems that this decreasing trend has stopped and that at least this now is stabilized, and we need to see and to continue to monitor the situation. As you will see talking about the markets, there are some indications that there might be more heroin available and more pure heroin available on the market, so we don't know yet what this means and what might be the consequences in the future.
We have always had in Europe a balanced approach in terms of security and health issues when it comes to the drugs problem, and you'll see that reflected in our report. I don't think there's any changes there. But what we are facing now is a much more globalised and joined-up problem, and the Commission has already mentioned the importance of the internet as a drug market in that area. Beyond that, what we're seeing is drugs moving across national borders far faster and quicker than they did before. We're seeing drugs produced in Europe actually leaving Europe, and some of the synthetic drugs like MDMA, some of the methamphetamine perhaps drugs we could look at there. But we're also seeing drug flows coming in through the same routes into Europe, drugs like heroin, for example. So I think what the other thing we've seen recently is both with cannabis and synthetic drugs a move to produce these drugs closer to their intended markets. And obviously that has advantages for producers as they don't need to move substances across national borders. So it reduces risks of doing business. So I think we have a more complicated, more joined up problem where the security and the health aspects have become increasingly entwined.
That was from a news conference at the European Monitoring Center on Drugs and Drug Addiction, or EMCDDA. They were announcing the release of the 2016 European Drug Report. You heard Dimitris Avramopoulos, European Commissioner for Migration, Home Affairs and Citizenship, EMCDDA Director Alexis Gustiel, and the Scientific Director for the EMCDDA, Paul Griffiths. I quote extensively from EMCDDA reports on my website, drugwarfacts.org. Though we're based in the U.S., Drug War Facts, which I should mention is also drugpolicyfacts.org, is international, with several chapters dealing with drug policies and statistics from other nations. A lot of reforms, including harm reduction policies like syringe exchange, safe consumption rooms, and heroin maintenance, as well as legal reforms such as decriminalization of all drug use, began in other nations. So it's important for us to look at those other nations and their experiences as we move forward with reform and harm reduction in the United States. You're listening to Century of Lies, a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network, on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. Finally, last week, during my interview with the journalist, activist, and comedian Ngayo Bilam, I mentioned a recent public hearing before the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. They were meeting to hear comments and to make their temporary rules for adult marijuana use sales permanent. At the end of his presentation, my friend Leland Berger, who's a local attorney and a member of Portland Normal, mentioned the safer argument. That, of course, is the fact that marijuana is relatively less dangerous than alcohol in that a marijuana overdose has not and cannot result in death. Rather than explain what happened, here's the audio recording, courtesy of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
And my name is Leland Berger. I'm chair of the Legislative Committee for Portland Normal, which is a consumer lobby. And as a produce consumer, I can tell you that I go out to the Sylvia Island. I've been to Kroger's Farm, and I sure would look forward to being able to go there and be able to sample cannabis that they cultivate. And I'd encourage the commission to adopt rules to allow cannabis tasting at farms in the same way that we have alcohol tasting. You know, most of when I read through the rules last night, and most of the things I wanted to talk to you about were where you included the residency requirement, and I would encourage you to just delete that now. Some of the 2016 stuff is in here, the micro canopies, for example, and it just makes sense. I think it would be cleaner. The other really super hyper technical thing I wanted to mention is that on page 4 in the definition section, both primary residence and process are subsection 40. So that needs to be renumbered. I think the trade samples provision is a great addition. Concerning the -2800, the prohibition on discounts, I want to urge the commission to allow retailers to allow discounts to veterans. 22 veterans take their lives each day from PTSD. Last week, Congress allowed, and we expect the president to sign into law, the ability of VA physicians to recommend to their veteran patients cannabis in states that allow medical cannabis. Some veterans are not able to afford the protection, the $200 protection fee that OHA charges for a card. And, I know there's broad support among retailers for that. Concerning the micro canopies, certainly, and I'm a lawyer, and I counsel people in the industry, and I certainly have been explaining to people that what with the 2016 changes where the OLCC licensed adult use producers and processors can sell into the medical system, where the early sales is going to sunset the end of this year, that there's a forced, not forced is a little strong, there's a certainly incentivized migration to the adult use side for producers. And particularly among producers for small medical gardens who are kind of being squeezed out of the process, having a micro canopy and being able to provide for patients is a terrific thing. I mean, I've been saying to your Patridge publicly and privately that I think what Oregon's been doing in terms of merging the adult use and the medical markets is the best effort so far in any of the legalized states with the least harm to patients. But I want to encourage the commission to consider reducing the fees for the micro canopies. I think $1,000 and $2,000 is too high. I think it should be half that. I think $500 and $1,000 would be fair. I appreciate your time this morning, and I wore this shirt to because I recently met with your staff about Portland Normal's efforts to get the lounges to reopen, and I recognize that it's difficult for staff and for the commission to recognize sometimes that it's different regulating cannabis from regulating alcohol. And one thing I hope that you'll keep in mind is that marijuana is safer than alcohol as we move forward in these regulations. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Revol, did you have a question?
No.
Since this is on the record, I'm going to disagree with that last statement because there's no proof of that. We have, you got, you're done. But I'm going to say I disagree with that. We have decades of information as to what alcohol does to people, good and bad. We don't have that kind of information.
My son's mother drank herself to death, and nobody has ever smoked themselves.
We're
not entitled to your opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts.
We're not going
to
debate.
Well, I'm not debating. I'm just saying.
You made a statement on the record.
Thank you.
You're done. We're not going to debate. That was the response of OLCC Commissioner Marvin D. Revol after Attorney Lee Berger mentioned the fact that marijuana is relatively safer than alcohol. Revol is from Eugene, Oregon. He is the owner and senior principal of Pacific Benefit Planners, an employee benefits and property and casualty agency, and he's a member of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The OLCC is responsible for setting and enforcing the rules on recreational alcohol use as well as adult social use of marijuana. As I said before, there is a booze culture in this country. It's a culture of denial. They don't use the phrase recreational alcohol use. Their preferred euphemism is simply drinking. Now think about that for a minute. Even when you go to the doctor, when they ask if you drink and how much, they aren't trying to find out if you ingest liquids like any normal human being. They're asking if you use alcohol. Same with tobacco. When the doctor asks if you smoke, they're really asking if you use tobacco. These euphemisms aren't just a sort of verbal shorthand. They are part of the normalization of tobacco and alcohol use. And more than that, the normalization of tobacco and alcohol addiction. Now, please understand, I am not saying that alcohol use is a bad thing per se. Overuse of alcohol is certainly bad. I'm the adult child of two alcoholics, but you don't need that kind of experience to know that. My father literally drank himself to death when I was 20 years old. That's why so many successful politicians have either indulged in serious alcohol abuse, like Richard Nixon, for example, or have learned how to use booze to manipulate people. Well, manipulate drunks, really. Booze culture is why it's taking so long to legalize marijuana. Booze culture is a culture of anger, of violence, a culture that opposes open, honest debate and prefers to simply shut down opposition. Marijuana use, on the other hand, tends to promote introspection, meditation, peaceful behaviors, much in the way that alcohol does not. In that sense, weed really is in competition with alcohol. It's an absolute opposite in many ways, and it's not just about mere money and market share. It's about a way of life. By working to legalize alcohol and to decriminalize the use of all drugs, we pit ourselves against a culture of intolerance and violence and oppression, against booze culture. That's why it's so important as we fight this drug war to keep reminding ourselves that this is bigger than just the freedom to use pot. It's about a whole lot more. This work to end the drug war is a fight for social justice and for a better, fairer, more equitable society. It doesn't end just because we change a couple of laws to let a handful of rich white guys make a greasy buck while having a party that the rest of us can only watch. And on that note, well, that's it for today. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies, a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The Drug Truth Network is on Facebook. Please give its page a like. Drug War Facts is on Facebook, too. Give it a like and share it with friends. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back next week with 30 minutes of news and information about the drug war and this century of lies. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.